step by step.
Welcome to Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. Let's have our joke now, Ryan.
Hey, I'm Ryan. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Ryan.
All right, so guy walks into a bar, and he sees all this meat hanging from the ceiling. And he goes up to the bartender, and he's like, what's with all the meat hanging from the ceiling? And the bartender's like, well, if you can jump up and slap the meat, you can drink all night for free. It's a contest we're doing. And the guy's like, nah, I don't know. And what's the catch? And the bartender's like, well, there's a $50 buy-in to do it. And the guy's like, nah, just give me a beer. The stakes are too high.
Thanks, Ryan. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise and that will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? If so, let's start the meditation.
Peace and peace,
now you could follow along for the Foglight Prayer, if you don't know what the words are on the screen or on the papers behind the chairs. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those whom are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. There's a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a great way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Peter to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it is kind of important to know what one is.
Peter, recovered alcoholic. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate, overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly come been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom be accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We found that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. And that principle is contempt, pride, investigation. Herbert Spencer, Big Book, page 57, 567 and 568.
Thank you, Peter. Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane meeting mode or just turn them off. Now I'd like to introduce Marion. We're looking forward to a wonderful message that you'll carry to us hopefully tonight. Thank you.
Oh, I'm Marion. I'm a recovered alcoholic. It's good to be here and good to be sober and this is my home group, and it's good to be home tonight. There's so many beautiful people in this room I just absolutely adore, whether it's women I sponsor, members of the home group, people, you know, from other places. And you know, it's like, why do you get so freaking freaked out by this every single time, you know? And it's just like, we're just one big little family here, you know? And it's always such an honor, you know, it's always such an honor to be of service in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, a place that gave me breath, a place that gave me life, a place that has given me a life beyond my imagination. And my heart is full. My heart is full. And I'm going to try to just ease into this a little bit because I'm kind of choked up here. And if anybody's been to one of my 12-step series, there's, you know, I am me up here. So whether it's tears or whether it's whatever, you know, it's... And that is kind of was a long time coming. This is my third series at Alcoholics and God. Not, that doesn't mean anything. But, I mean, and I just look and my life and how it's changed and how it's grown in the last few years. And, you know, my sobriety date is November 11th, 1989. And my sponsor is Polly P. And she has a sponsor named Rena. And I don't know who sponsors Rena. Rena had a woman that was from South Florida. What was her name? She passed away recently. Tommy. Yeah, Tommy. And so I don't know who's sponsoring Rena now. And so I've just a great sponsor. And I and there's times in my life with her where I've tried to call her and, you know, just tell her everything's fine, show up better than I really am, you know, not be honest and not be real. And, you know, because she sponsors tons of women and I would compare myself to the other women and I'd want to show up a little fancier, you know. Oh, yeah, Polly, my life is great. When inside I'm just going, God, please tell her the truth, you know. And one thing I've learned in this program and in continued years of sobriety, you know, is that it was the first relationship I had in my life was with my first sponsor where I could be vulnerable. I could be, you know, bare naked with my emotions and with my feelings and would never get judged. Never get judged, and I would get welcomed with open arms. And I'd always think, you know, oh my God, she's going to think I'm crazy and she's going to hang up the phone. And it never was like that. And it's never been like that. And AA has never been like that. And it's never will be like that. You know, that's my greatest thing I love about AA is welcome home. You know, and if you're new to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous here tonight, I welcome you. And I hope you feel the same welcome I felt when I got here. And it is a big deal to find a home in your heart in AA. It's a big deal. We're people who run from that. We run from, you know, and this selfishness and this pride. And if anybody sees who I... Whoa. If anybody sees who I really am. If anybody sees who I really am. And all you guys have ever said to me is welcome. And if that's all I said tonight, I can tell you that that comes from the bottom of my heart. And I was talking a little bit about, you know, it being the third series, which means nothing. But I remember being up here my first year and, you know, kind of my own journey has been a lot of being able to be in my own skin and being able to be, you know, Peter, you know, he's such a coach to me. And, you know, just do Marion, just be Marion. And that's actually one of the things I do in my life that is a passion of my heart is just do you, you know, just be you. You know, Sam Shoemaker talks about it in I stand by the door. I stand at the door. I stand by the door. You know that we might be the only person that can be standing by that door that has the exact words, the exact story that somebody else needs to hear at any particular moment. You know, who's going to work for Stephen might not necessarily hear that from me. And that's okay. You know, And in my journey in my life, it's always been about coming into this place, you know. My first year up here, I think I quoted Peter 12 million times every single talk. Or I quoted my sponsor every single, you know. And I love that, you know. Like, nothing I really say beyond my own experience and my own story is anything original. You know, when we work from this groundwork of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, when we have a sponsor with depth and weight, when they pass on to us what was freely given to them, my God, you guys, that's nothing short of a miracle, right? So the first year I was clumsy. I think I gave 5 talks that were 20 minutes long because I was up here shaking. And that doesn't mean that's still not going to happen, because it can. You know, but I just, at 29 years of sobriety, I can tell you, last year I was living down in Fort Lauderdale. Here it is a year later, or more back up in East Boca, and because that's where God brought us. And I can look back a year, and I was kind of reflecting on that a little bit today in my meditation, that if I can look back a year at 29 years, and I can look back a year and say, Marion, have you grown any? I can say, yeah, you bet. You bet. In my relationship with God, in my relationship with others, in a better understanding, working knowledge of the Big Book. And I am no expert at that. I am not, you know, some people are amazing at the mechanics. They just seem to, you know, I'm a lot like my sponsor. She'll quote it a lot, and I'll talk about some of that stuff. But what I've learned to do is be me, and it's the biggest struggle of my life. And I used to have a pastor that says, you know, just be you, Marion. You make a rotten somebody else, you know, you know. And I do, because I would, you know, I remember my first sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, she chewed her gum a certain way. She looked a certain way. She dressed a certain way. You know, actually, my very first sponsor in AA was a girl that worked at the same grocery store I did, and her name was Kim, and she had 6 months sober. And I was like, whoa, you know, she's 6. I mean, how the heck do you get 6 months sober? And that was just like a temporary thing, but I was in treatment, and I had to make a call and get my little Kim. Her name was Kim. But, you know, but I just wanted to talk, because I had no idea who I was. I had no idea who I was. I would walk like her and talk like her and whatever. And then what ended up happening was, this is coming to me, you know, I was at an AA meeting. I had the same home group for 20 years. It was a Northwest group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Bellingham, Washington, and some of you have heard this before, and some of you haven't, so here's my story. And, you know, I think it's really important, too, as we start step series for me, is that, you know, you get to know who I am a little bit. And by the end of it, you will know me. Trust me. So I'm at this meeting. I'm fresh out of treatment. I went for 30 days, and I'm, like, crazy. You know, I'm like, 30 days sober. I'm trying to be a mom. I'm trying to show up for life. And this little beautiful blonde lady comes up to me, and she was even shorter than me. She's like 4'11", and her name was Kathy Downs. And she would, you know, I came up to her at a meeting. I was at a nooner, and she came up to me and, hey, Marion, what are you doing this weekend? And I was like, Kathy, I'm taking the kids to the park, and I'm going to go buy groceries, and I'm going to go to a meeting, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to do all this stuff. And she says, hey, maybe one of these days you'll slow down long enough to let God be in charge. See, there's things that happen in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that is kind of a religious term, and I'll say it, and that's, you can take it for whatever it is for you. It's called the Rhema Word of God, and that's our own truth. When people speak things, when they say things, this is 29 years ago. I know the exact sentence that woman said to me that day, and I knew she was a woman for me. And through our journey in the Big Book and through our journey in life, you know, she was married to this man named Art Downs, and he smoked way too many cigarettes, and they lived in this little trailer out on the Aldrich Road. I'm trying to paint a picture because I'm a songwriter. Got to take you down the journey. And those two, you know, they would have picnics at their house, and we'd drink too much coffee and smoke too much cigarettes and just hang out. And that's the first thing that happened to me in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was the spirit of the fellowship that romanced me and brought me in. And you know, people like that that were just so kind-hearted. I'd never been around anything like that. I never had a place. I never belonged to anything in my life because it was me against the world, you know. And that woman went through, she had brain cancer, and she taught me, you know, no hair on her head, trying to raise her kids, you know. Oh, wouldn't call her, you know, don't call her, don't bug her, she's sick. And she'd call me and blast me on the phone like, how dare you not call me and deny me my sobriety, Marion? How dare you? It's like, oh, crap, you know. And we'd sit in her little kitchen in her little trailer on the Aldrich Road, and we'd go through the book, and she'd have those little scarves on her head. And, you know, she's losing her life. She's leaving her children. And she's sitting down at the table with a big book and working with me. And that stuff has been ingrained in me, you know, that sometimes it takes long hours. Sometimes it's big efforts. But I'm telling you, that woman gave me, you know, just as a perspective of Alcoholics Anonymous that made me fall in love with this fellowship. It made me fall in love with it. And, you know, I was raised in this family. We were six kids. There was three girls and there was three boys. And I know you guys are probably sick of this punchline, but I don't care. You know, we were the dysfunctional Brady Bunch. Maybe you are, maybe you're not. It's my story and I'm sticking to it. I guess, you know, and I was the middle girl, and so that made me Jan. Thanks for laughing. I love it. And I wanted to be Marsha, just like Jan did. And my dad was a World War II veteran, and he chopped a lot of wood, and he carried a lot of water, and he had calluses on his hands and his toes, and he worked hard. And my mom was born and raised up in Alaska, and, you know, and they were alcoholics. And we had everything that came with an alcoholic home, you know. Dad would show up at home drunk after work, and mom barely got dinner done, you know. And, you know, the backstory is this, you know, I'm 6 years old and I'm going to school and the teacher's washing my face and combing my hair. I'm going to school without a lunch. I've got dinner every night because my mom would get drunk and make dinner for dad, you know, after his hard day work. And, you know, and what happens when you stick around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous long enough is we can tell our stories and we can say all that stuff. And I wouldn't change a minute. I wouldn't change a minute. I wouldn't, you know, I'm named after my mom. My mom was Marion, and had a great aunt Marion. So my great aunt Marion called me Marion the Turd. So I'm Marion the Turd. But all that time growing up as a little girl and really having the house that nobody came to, and not, you know, it wasn't pretty. It was messy, and there was fights, and there was, you know, things like that. And so kids didn't come to my house, but I went to other girls' houses, and they had the dolls, and they had the ribbons, and they had the bicycles, and they had those things. And I just, oh man, I wanted to be them. I wanted to be anybody else but me as a little girl. As a little girl, I couldn't wait to be somebody else. And you know, fast forward growing up, I go to a party when I'm 17 years old, and see, my dad was a pretty angry man, and I see this guy getting in a fight at this party, and he was hot, and he had no shirt on, and it's the 70s, and, you know, and he's in a fight, and I'm like, it was love at first sight, ladies, you know what that's like? It's like, So it was like, meeting my dad, you know, and that first drink, you know, that first drink was at 15 years old. That first drink was at a high school dance, and it was in a bathroom stall, and it was a bottle of MD-20 that I ripped off from the grocery store, and it was a beautiful social drink that went like this, and I puked, and then another slug, and then I was off to the races, you know, and man, you know, I don't say it lightly, a lot of people say this, but it was a panacea for my ills. It was like, okay, now I'm party girl. Game on. You know, kegs in the back of the car, you know, green stuff to go with it, all the craziness that goes along with this. And I ended up getting pregnant. We get married. And I'm the alcoholic housewife of sorts, yes. And I'm pregnant. I have three kids. I'm just going to try to tell a bunch of my story, little ins and outs of it, and get into some mechanics of step one, two. We'll see what God says. But, excuse me, breathe, stop. Okay. So I have three kids in a row. They're like stair steps. Brandon, boom. Brandon's 39 now. Jake's 38 and Jessica's 37. And, but at the time, they're little, and I'm home drinking, he's drinking, we're, you know, and it's like all those things you do as a little girl where I'm never going to be like that. I'm never going to be like my mom. I'm never going to be like my dad. I'm going to give my kids a better life. I'm going to do all that. And I had no intentions of ever turning out to be like my mom, and I was. And at the time, my daughter had turned 4 years old. I found out I was pregnant again, and we were really excited to have these three little kids. They're 4, 5, and 6, and I'm going to have another baby, and we were super excited about it because we've been doing diapers and bottles, and, you know, with three little kids like that, like, we potty trained the boys at the same time, and we were living out on a farm so they could just pee out in the grass, and so that worked really good, and... Just a hint for potty training boys, live on a farm. It's perfect. And so anyway, I get pregnant with my fourth child. October 19th, 1986, my son Brian is born. 3 months later, I go back to work at a grocery store. And it was actually the date of January 22nd, 1987, and my little sister was babysitting him, and I went to her house to pick him up, and she went into the bedroom to pick him up, and she ran into the bedroom, and he was purple, and she came running out, and we took him up to the hospital, and I don't even know what death looks like. I have no idea what that's about. And I just kept telling to her, you know, on the passenger side, and she's holding my baby, please just keep breathing into him, keep breathing into him. And we took him to the hospital, and the nurse, as quick as she got him in his arms, she said, your son is dead. And what had happened that day on January 22nd is my son had died at my sister's house of crib death. And later that same year, and I don't say that matter-of-factly, I'm just, you know, it's 32 years later, there's a whole bunch of 32-year-olds in this room, and my heart goes, you are like my kids. You know, you're a reflection of who Brian would be today. And later that same year, in August, my mom died. And, you know, how this fits into our alcoholism is like, you know, well, it all fits into it, but I was thinking about this the other day when we were reading in the book, is like, when it talks about the psychologists, we hardly give them a fair break, you know? And I was crazy. Like, I couldn't get enough booze and anything else in my body to kill the pain that was going on inside of me. And I just thought, I'm just flat out crazy. And I made an appointment with the psychologist, not telling her why I was drinking and how I was drinking or anything like that. But what she did say to me that day, and I always take this back to Bill's ominous warning, and she gave me a warning that day, and she didn't even know it. And it's like that thing, too. Again, how do you remember one sentence that's 30 years ago. How do you remember one sentence? Like these things, these rhema words of God, these things that are signs along the way of how God was pointing me here. And this psychologist looked at me and she said, Marion, when you lose a child, you lose your future. And when you lose a parent, you lose your past. And you're having trouble living in today. And that was my life. You know, I left her that day. I kept drinking. I kept doing stuff. I'm trying to raise these three little kids. I can't, you know, and I was thinking of this the other day, like how absent I was from their life. You know, I was so caught up in my own grief. I couldn't comfort my children. Like I was just trying to remember, how did I comfort them? How did I give them any comfort in that? You know, in us moms, us, our powerlessness and our disease, you know, I know that I know that I know that I would do anything for my children. Anything. I mean, even today, man, there's a spoiled, rotten 38, 39, 37 year olds, man. You know, I would throw myself in front of a train for them. That isn't even a question. It isn't even a question. That's what we do as parents, right? But I could not get sober for them. I could not get sober for them. Do you think lack of power is our dilemma? In my self-will and in my own will, I can do that. I can throw myself in front of a train for my kids. I can stop things like that from happening. I would do that for them, but I can't stop drinking for them. Lack of power is my dilemma. Lack of power is my dilemma. So the next year and a half after that, I find this faith. I find this faith through this Baptist preacher that my kids were sending him off to Sunday school. I find this faith. And, you know, we often talk in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that, you know, a belly full of booze and a head full of AA doesn't mix. Have a belly full of, a heart full of the Holy Spirit or something. And a belly full of booze. That doesn't mix either, right? and I was tormented because I wanted to quit so bad. And our book talks about so many times about the methods that we try and the ways that I tried to, you know, I knew I had a problem. I knew it was just like, and every time I quit, I knew I was swearing with or without a solemn oath. I meant it every time, you know, and I'm trying to quit for these kids. And now I got the Lord, and you know, surely I can quit now. And I couldn't. In fact, you know, the hideous four horsemen that the book talks about, you know, waking up with the terror and bewilderment and all that, you know, coming to in the morning and running to a preacher going, I can't do this. We'll just keep praying. You know, and I was at the 12-step house one night, and a man said to me, he goes, well, You say in your talk sometimes that that you kept praying and you kept praying. How do you know God just didn't save your life through those prayers? And I was like, oh yeah, because it didn't happen on my time. It happened on God's time. You know, it happened on God's time. So November 11th, 1989. It's the day after my 30th birthday. I go down to my bright pink bathroom. It's the 80s. I've got the matted, I mean, it was matted at the time. It was an 80s afro, but it turned kind of like into Bob Marley hair. It was like all in dreads, and it wasn't like I was trying. It just, I hadn't combed my hair. I wasn't trying for the dreads. And I saw something I never saw before in the mirror. My little sister had gotten sober a year before me. She had taken me to one AA meeting. For the life of me, I don't even know why I went. But I remember, the only thing I remember about that meeting is her on one side and Donna her on the other side. I should quit using last names. Yikes. Sorry. So do it twice. They took me, I must have said, okay, I'll go with you. And I don't even know how they wrangled me. I'm like, I must have been in a blackout. And all I remember, the only thing I remember them saying was, you know, somebody announced at the meeting, is there anybody here for their first meeting? And I elbowed them both and I said, don't say a word. And they didn't. I have no idea what happened in that meeting, but a year later, I'm ready. I get up that day and I go down into my pink bathroom and I look in the mirror. And you know, another warning was my little brother who was living under a bridge. And he was the one with the problem. My little sister is drinking wine and popping pills in the morning. They're the ones with the problem. And I was always looking outside here. Because, see, I always thought, you know, an alcoholic lives under a bridge like my brother. An alcoholic drinks like my sister in the morning and does pills. But look at me. I'm showing up at PTA meetings drunk. I'm like got a car in the driveway. I've got, you know, a sandbox and a tree house. And I'm trying to provide for these kids what I didn't have. But inside I was, you know, like my sponsor Polly talks about this all the time, you know, that I loved and I cherished my children. I love them and I cherish my children. And I abused them and I neglected them. And it wasn't until I could put that all in the same sentence. You know, I knew I loved and I cherished them, but I didn't know that I abused and I neglected them. And I needed to know that. And that doesn't mean I smacked him around because I didn't. But it was like, get your own cereal. And it's like, turn on the TV yourself. And it's all those things that go along with that. And I don't know how I got that from the bathroom, but I did. All right. So, the gift of desperation is what met me in the mirror that night. I did because I was talking about my brother. And my little brother had said another wise word to me one day, some wise words to me one day. And he said, you know, he's in jail, out of jail, robbing, stealing, lying. And I'm like, Eric, problem, problem, problem. Joanne, problem, problem, problem. You know, and Eric looks at me one day and he says, one of these days you're going to take a good, long, hard look in the mirror. And that happened. And when I saw myself in the mirror that morning, I saw something I'd never seen before that I will never be able to explain, that I'll never understand what happened fully. But all I can say, it was the gift of desperation for me that day. And God made me desperate. And the voice that comes to me is like, go to treatment. Daryl H. had gone to treatment 6 months before that. 6 months before that, and I'd never been to treatment. I didn't even know about treatment, you know, whatever, except for Daryl had gone. And so my big sister showed up at the house. She took me to treatment. I left my three little kids and a drunken husband at home, but I needed to put my life mask on first. And so I went to this treatment center for 30 days. I did the first three steps in treatment. Treatment center styles with, I don't even know what it was. I remember like adding up all the money that I spent on alcohol and it was like $10,000. I don't even remember, but you know, things like that. But I was ready and I was desperate. And this is a thing that I know, I mean, besides women and Alcoholics Anonymous that I get the pleasure and joy and honor to work with, you know, when somebody is desperate, there's almost like nothing you can say that's wrong. When you open up this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's nothing you can say that's wrong. And that's the one thing I can't give anybody. And, you know, the job I do for a living, a lot of times, sometimes people aren't desperate. And that's the one thing I can't give them. That's the one thing we can't give somebody. But when we are, man, when the student's ready, the teacher appears. So I go through the first three steps in treatment. And go back up, Marion. Okay, Marion W. I'm in my third day at detox and I'm laying in the bed. And I was pretty sure that I'd overreacted. I was feeling so much better. I was good. I'm going to go home. See, this is this disease that lies in our mind that always wants to, oh, I've got to go pay the bills. I've got to go take care of the kids. I've got to go. I got to go. Thanks very much. Feeling better. And on that third day, and it was the third day, like kind of like Jesus. So I'm laying there, and these two beautiful people came in, and there's this woman named Becky T, and this man named Steve N, and he was about 6'7", and she was this little nurse. And in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, we have this picture of the man in the bed, and I was the woman in the bed. And I sat there, or I laid in that bed, and those two people sat at the end of the bed, and their message had depth and weight. And all they did was share their stories. They didn't point the finger at me and say, man, you've messed up this time. You're such a screw up. You know, what's your problem? Now you're in detail. You know, they didn't say that stuff. They said the things that we say. We say that we share our experience. We share our identification with each other, right? And we share our stories. And that's what they did with me that day. And I know that I know that I know the miraculous happened for me. And what happened that day was the love of God and the love of the fellowship came together in that room for me in that detox, November 14th, 1989. And I'd like to say that that was the last time that my mind tried to take over. But once I had finished those three steps that I was talking about, I got to go to an outside meeting. And so all these things were happening, like these coincidences that were happening, right? So I know one other woman that's sober besides my little sister. And this was this woman named Dawn Y. And Dawn Y came to, doing better with that. Dawn Y came to the treatment center to be my temporary sponsor that was appointed. And she was the only other woman I knew that was an alcoholic, right? So like these things started happening, you know. Dawn comes and she gets to take me to an outside meeting. And I go down to dry dock and I get down to dry dock and it's a Friday night, you know, and I'm at a meeting of AA, you know, and it's smoke billowing in the rooms and the floors are like this and, you know, the radiators clanking and the trains going by and I'm like, wow, cool. This is where my life has ended up now, you know. On a Friday night, you know, nevertheless, this is awesome, right? But, I believe, you know, there was this woman sitting against the wall. She was a little Native American woman. And the words that came out of her mouth that night was words of depth and weight once again. She just had an open share. I was ready to go. It's Friday night. I'm over it. I'm at dry dock. I'm over this stuff. I got to go. I got things to attend to. And this little Native American woman that I have never seen again in my entire life spoke about her children. I remember her speaking about being a mom, and I remember how she wasn't there for her children, but that message kept me there that night. It kept me there. And I'll be forever grateful for that. And, you know, if it's a disease that said, so my body doesn't have alcohol in it, right? My body doesn't have alcohol in it 30 days after a detox. Right? When I'm at dry dock after working a few steps and I'm sitting at a meeting, my body doesn't have alcohol in it. Right? But where that disease centers is in my mind, right? The first 43 pages of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous goes through and through to describe it, to knock it into our heads, man, that this is a physical allergy and an obsession that is in my mind, you know? But that obsession that's in my mind, okay, it's like our Big Book talks about, it's like the boy whistling in the dark. The boy is still whistling in the dark in my life. 29 years of sobriety. I need to stay ahead of that. Sometimes I like to call it like the roaring lion that's sleeping, you know? And how do I keep that asleep? The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, working with other drunks, constant contact with this God of my understanding. If lack of power is my understanding, if lack of power is my dilemma, I got to tap into that power, and I've got to have a relationship with that power, and I've got to have a name for that power. I have to have a name for that power. And so that's what I've done in my my early days of recovery. That's what it started like. I wanted to read a couple places in here. I'm going to go. Going to go some big book on you. On the opening page of Alcoholics Anonymous, the story of how many thousands of women, men and women, have recovered from alcoholism. Recovered. That's the first promise, right? So I found myself on the beach today. I thought, oh my God, I want to get a little bit. Bear with me here. I've been told that there's 150 promises in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. 150. You know, we'll talk about step 9 and if we're painstaking, and we everybody knows the third step promise. Not everybody, but some of us know the third step promises, the fifth step promises. So I'm going to try to do some of these. You guys want to bear with me? Okay. See if I can do it. Okay. Marion gets technical. It's not technical. It's words. So on page 17, nearly all have recovered. They have solved the drink problem. Pretty cool, right? But there exists among us a fellowship. The feelings of having shared that common disease, that common thing, right? From there is a solution. Now I'm getting nervous. Whenever I do this part, I get nervous. Stay with me. And it's just week one. I'll be less nervous next week, I promise. Thank you. There is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of our shortcomings, which this process requires for its successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others, and we have come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we have been living it. When therefore we were approached by those whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us to do. Us, but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found heaven. And we've been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we'd never dreamed. The great fact is just this, and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do ourselves. How does this happen? Page 27. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Ideas. See, how does that happen? How does that happen? Emotions and attitudes, which were once the guiding force of the lives of these men, are suddenly cast to one side, and a complete new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. Holy cow, guys. How does that happen for us? What used to drive us, what used to, are suddenly cast aside. Where did I go next? Oh, I did that. Oh, I know where I want to go next. Oh, 28. We in our turn sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first to be the flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us, or if you prefer, a design for living that really works. Where else was I going to go? Oh, cool. A vision for you. Have you a sufficient substitute? Yeah, there's a substitute, and it's vastly more than that. It's a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you. It may seem incredible that these men are to become happy, respected, and useful once more. How can they rise out of such misery, bad repute, and hopelessness? The practical answer is that since these things have happened among us, they can happen with you. Should you wish them above all else and be willing to make use of our experience, we're sure they will come. The age of miracles is still with us. Our own recovery proves that. One more. And then I'm going to close. Did I do it, Mike? I feel like a child up here sometimes. Okay. Oh, let's see. Still you may say, page 164. Still you may say, but I will not have the benefit of contact with you who write this book. You cannot be sure. God will determine that. So you must remember that your real reliance is always upon Him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. That's all I'm going to read on that part. I'm going to finish with this. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless and keep you till then. Okay, so I promise next week I'm not going to promise anything. That maybe I won't sweat as much and be as nervous. But I don't even understand how those 164 and all that is promises of the first step, but that's what it said on that thing. Share that with you. And anyway, it's great to be here tonight, and it's great to see you all, and it's good to be home, and we'll see you next week. Thank you, Marion. Yeah, you're welcome.
Let's thank Marion again. Have Ryan for our secretary's report.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm a recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, the baskets are now going around. And I've asked Isabel to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, family. Isabel, recovered alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
A 1940s-style big book sponsorship from forward to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way, 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back into his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I see a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Awesome. And is there anyone in the room that needs a sponsor? If you could raise your hand. Could you just stand up real quick? All right. So just see any of those people that raised their hand, and one of the ladies can help get you back to God. Please join us Monday nights for our Big Book Study meeting, where the book comes alive. Fellowship starts at 6:30, and then the Big Book Study starts at 7:15. And we have CDs, mugs, large print big books, little red books, and big book dictionaries for sale on the tables in the back. And then we do have announcements. So Broward County Intergroup, if you need medallions, if you need literature, there's information on their office hours, how to get in touch with them, phone numbers, website. Next. Volunteer opportunities. Service keeps you sober, so if you're looking for a way to give back, there's a couple options up there. This is a new one. The BCIC, Broward County Institutions Committee, is having a meeting January 12th at 10 a.m. at the 12-Step House. A's Got Talent is coming up in February, so, that's next month, guys. Practice, get the routines perfected. We got Spring Fling coming up, chili cook-off and dinner. So bring your best chili and enter the contest. Been there, done that. And that's it for that. Just a quick reminder also, there's a 75-foot no smoking and vape zone in front of the doors of the church. We do have buckets set up down at the end here, so don't be an asshole. Throw your butt into the bucket. And we meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells, and I'll see you next week.
We have tonight's session and all past speakers podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everybody to our Monday night Big Book study. And those who wish to thank Marion tonight for her message of hope, please line up down the center aisle. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done. On earth as it is in heaven, give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
See you Monday next Thursday.
Thirsty bodies aching. I am desperately in need of restoration. Yeah, and I am ready for you to take me higher. Yeah, the only thing that I can do. Can't get you right. It doesn't matter.
right, Michael Chase, here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go. Lifted, I see the light, count my blessings when I go to sleep at night, and I dream now. Fear has left me and I'm standing tall. A pile of bricks now lies where once there stood a wall that I hid behind. For all this time, sometimes it takes a burning bush or a great white light to set you right. Well, my eyes don't cry now, and I'm out to dry. Pity party's over, the guest of honor has arrived, and he's on my side. For the first time in my life, are green now, growing vines. They twist and turn each way, flowers blooming all the time. That's at my door, like never before. I had to change everything to realize that today is the best day of my life. Broken man, I travel far and wide through the great divide, through his own heart, yeah. Well, I have a life today when it give away, and it's just about to start. So I face each day brand new way, show up and plug in my guitar, and I play my songs, and people sing along, and stomp their feet and raise their arms, and here in this moment that we share, nothing could compare. Lessons when I go to sleep at night, and I dream now. Yeah, I dream now, and everything's alright. Oh man, going on 10 years old that song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.
One, don't you? I've worked so hard for so long. watch these walls be bought and sold. So Lord, shine a light on me tonight. Lord, shine a light on me tonight.
Shine a light, Lord, shine a light.
Lord, shine a light on me tonight.
Shine a light, Lord, shine a light.
There ain't no horrors on your lap. See, I once was young and free, baby, but this old world's so long. Shine your light on me tonight. Just won't set me free. Well, clap your hands, you believe me, child.